We've been missing you. Do you want to find the witch friends you've been missing? Do you want to participate in these conversations live? And do you want to support the work of recovering a true history of feminist ideas about magic? Do you want to hang out? Do you want an invite to Zoom together with Amy and myself every new moon, along with our hilarious, diverse, wise, queer, creative, anti-racist, science, and awe-loving coven? You must join the Missing Witches Patreon. It's pay what you can, and we can't wait to meet you there. Patreon.com/missingwitches.
You aren't being a proper woman, therefore you must be a witch.
Be a witch. Be a witch. Be a witch. Be a witch. Be a witch.
You must be a witch.
Witches and whatever titles you give to your crafting out there in the world these days, welcome back. Welcome back to the coven we create between our ears in this space where we have the privilege of talking about magic and loving and listening to each other as we're honest about how we are crafting the world around us. It's nice to be in a space where we take that shit seriously together. I'm in snowy Montreal and I'm portaling through the space-time continuum to meet with Marcelite today in Atlanta. And we have in attendance with us members of our coven from the Pay What You Can Patreon. Come join us there sometime if you feel like talking to other witches in that space or being a part of these conversations before they go live on the podcast. Welcome. Today we get to talk about, well, whatever the fuck Marceline wants to talk about. But what I'm excited to start with is you're a witch in academia. You're doing it. You're in this space. You're doing this sort of great labor of bringing this knowledge into a kind of public light. And there's a big generosity in that. And I wonder sometimes if there's some hesitancy or complexity to it. And I wondered if you could talk about that. You're on your way to being a witch doctor.
Actual call me Dr. Witch. Is there some hesitancy? Yeah, I think so. I was really nervous about choosing this subject for my dissertation because I think it's twofold. I think one, religious studies has its origins in Christianity in the United States, right? So in general, any kind of And I think, and then Christianity, and then that has expanded to Abrahamic, just all Abrahamic traditions, right? And then recently, I guess maybe in the past, maybe 20, 15, 20 years, people like my advisor, Dr. Diane Stewart, really started the movement towards studying African heritage, African traditional, African derived religions. And that was radical at that time. And now we're just starting to see African, like people who teach African derived and African traditional religions in the academy across the US and religion departments. And typically we would find it in anthropology, people who study these traditions. But I think there's something about being in the field of religion that okay, this is a religious tradition, not necessarily an ethnic study of someone else's practice, right? So there's like a legitimacy that's been developed, growing. So just studying African traditional religions, African heritage religions, one is a step, right? And then studying the occult, studying the esoteric, studying that which is largely demonized outside of and really categorized outside of religion, right? Felt like a huge step too. It felt like a huge step. I have been, even as I'm putting my dissertation work out there, I'm like, no, it's real. Like there's this movement. People are actually, there's lots of Black witches, and kind of having to feeling the need to affirm that. And I think, and also because witch and witchcraft are terms that have historically been used to demonize African derived and African traditional religions. And so people are very wary about it, understandably, right? They've been used to categorize kind of, you know, whole masses of people of the African diaspora in the African continent, and categorize it as witchcraft and devil worship and demon work, right? In order to colonize, in order to enslave, in order to extract resources. So I think people are, so there's a hesitancy, even in practitioners and scholars of African traditional and African derived religions, there's a hesitancy to use the term witch. Yeah, people are nervous about it. But the reality is also that there's this large movement of Black witches online, people calling themselves that. So we have to kind of grapple with both realities and properly contextualize it so it doesn't get exploited by mainstream media.
I mean, there's obviously there's power. I mean, we know that as witches, right? There's power in these places where there's been shame. There's power in taking that. It's something I wondered about because you really embrace, I am a self-described Black witch. That's a title. That's a title for you that you're like, yeah, yeah. I'm a practitioner of these different spiritual traditions, but I'm also this thing, this word. I'm going to own this word. Can you talk about what that process was like for you? Did you always know you were a witch? Was there a time where you were like, no, fuck, yes, it's this thing. This is what it is.
So my personal background and relationship to it. So my mom is she's a witch. She's a witch. She's a Black witch. She practices kind of an eclectic. She works with the Egyptian deities. And I think somewhere along the line was maybe introduced to Oshun, the Yoruba Orisha of love and beauty and performance and all kinds of things. And she would do a lot of healing energy work. So when I was, what was I? I was probably like 10. I had this dog. The dog's name was Sarah. I don't know why we named the dog Sarah. But Sarah was, we had her on, she was laying on the ground, and my mom was like, okay, so call in the energy of, we had this big mountain that was near our house, call in the energy of the mountain, call in this big one lone tree. Call in the energy of the tree and imagine it circling around and those different colors, and harness that energy through your hands, place your hands on Sarah the dog and imagine that energy's like moving out the negative energy and bringing in healing energy. So she taught me that those kinds of healing modalities. She also taught me how to manifest. Maybe unethical at the time, but I had a crush on this boy, and there was another girl that came into town, and he had a crush on her, and me and mom did some work.
So, I love it.
You know, in retrospect, I don't know if I would do that now.
Right.
But yeah, it's always been a part of my life. It was also very much a part of. I grew up in a mixed race family. My dad's white, my mom's Black, in a very conservative white town outside of Portland, Oregon. And Portland, Oregon, if folks don't know, is Oregon in general is very, 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 very white. So they kicked, I think it wasn't until like 1926 that they allowed Black folks in Oregon.
I did not know that. We were just talking with an artist on an episode about Portland and about this feeling of like, you know, the trees and this sort of like hippie progressive little island surrounded by Proud Boys was how she described it.
And it's in the liberal rhetoric too, right? Like Portland's this very liberal town, but it's insidious in that as well. Yeah, sometimes the lines between the Proud Boys and the liberals is
a moving line. Differences. Not a real line moving sometimes. Line.
So we lived kind of on the outskirts, and it was around a lot of conservative folks. And magic was, or just whatever we did, was kind of a part of surviving, of making sure of doing like of protection, of dealing with some of the harassment and the microaggressions that we might face. Yeah, so yeah, so it's always been a part of my life. And then I always would hold, I've held ritual space quite a bit. When I lived in New York for 12 years, I held ritual space for friends of mine. And I worked with this organization, Casa Tepexache, which is a woman of color healing space in the Bronx. And there I learned how to move negative energy out of my body and heal, do love healing work and spiritual healing work. So yeah, it's important. It's important. And because it's such a fraught word too, and because I think it's kind of a, I want to say this, I don't know if I want to say this on the record, but it's kind of a fuck you to the Academy, right? It's kind of like a,
yeah.
It's kind of like a, yeah, I'm a witch and I'm a soon to be, hopefully soon to be doctor and yeah. What, you know, yeah. And what.
Yeah. Well, there's also like something so powerful, but I bet so complicated about writing and researching embodied knowledge or about moving energy or about the kinds of healing that you're talking about. Those things don't sit well in, you know, a white hegemonic discourse that is the academia around religion or healing. Like spending time in other communities that do this kind of healing has probably helped you find the pieces of language that help, but that must have been hard. That must be hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. It's growing. People are waking up to it. I think there's a lot more emphasis now on embodied knowledge. And I've been interested in pedagogy and how we teach and how can we teach beyond the text-based rational knowledge that is enlightenment kind of knowledge that we prioritize in the academy, right? So can we do more rituals? I did a manifestation ritual with some of my students at a couple of universities and a couple of conferences. And the result, people's reactions were just phenomenal. I had students crying in class, you know, I think I could manifest this thing or even to imagine what my life could be like just by imagining just, you know, having all the things that I deserve in my life, having that romantic partner, having the, you know, money to buy fancy cheese, having enough whatever. And also the materiality, like working with herbs, right? Working with but we get that gets so lost in academic text-based knowledge. It's really hard to know religion, any religions. I'm also a practitioner of Ifa, right? I read about Ifa. I didn't know about Ifa until I went to an Ile and danced and saw people, you know, give sacrifice and set up the altar and, you know, serve the elders and all of the embodied knowledge that comes with these religious practices or these spiritual practices. Yeah, so I'm hoping that the Academy can get on board soon and think about how do we value these alternative ways of knowing. And I think that as that happens, we're going to start valuing different people, right? So if we're valuing the knowledge of our grandmothers, right? If we're valuing, not that our grandmothers weren't academics, because maybe they were, you know, but if we're valuing maybe like the medicinal knowledge that they had. My mom always puts a kind of weed on my foot for bee stings, right? That kind of knowledge or dreams, right? The kinds of awareness that come from prophetic dreams tell you about your future, right? If we start valuing that, which was used for, you know, ever, right? As like a form of, okay, don't eat this plant, you know, eat this plant. This is a remedy. Then that's valuing Black and brown people. I think that we're valuing students that come into our classrooms and carry that knowledge with them and don't feel so isolated when they feel like maybe some people might call imposter syndrome, but maybe the more structural aspect of that, right? That tells Black and Brown young people that they don't know, but actually we know a lot, right? And that knowledge comes in different forms and we need to value that. Yeah, did that answer your question?
I mean, I don't even remember really what my question was, but that answered so many great things. You know, can you tell us about some of the spaces you've seen where Black witchcraft is supporting activism, is supporting people? Specifically, you wrote about Harriet's Apothecary. Like, can you give us some windows into some of the spaces that you've seen so we can send love, send support, buy things, send money? Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, tell us about it.
So Harriet's Apothecary, I don't know if they all identify as witches. They are more of a spiritual, I don't know how each person identifies. So
sure. That's, yeah.
But they have done one thing that I had written about, the, what was it? The nightclub.
At Pulse?
In Florida. Yeah, they had a ceremony where, so it's made up of Black spiritual and cultural workers. And they had a ceremony to honor the dead and to help heal members of the LGBTQ people of color community. And they did a collaboration with the Audre Lorde Project. And the Audre Lorde Project is an LGBTQ STGNC people of color organization in New York. They do some work around housing. They do some work around keeping communities safe without relying on the police. Let's see. So Harriet's Apothecary. So Harriet's Apothecary has been instrumental, has worked with them, and also has worked with, I think, some other organizations to bridge that community healing activist space. So I think it's every season. I'm not sure if they're doing it now since COVID, or might look different. But every season they would hold these community wellness, I don't know, retreat space things, this big warehouse, and you could go and get acupuncture, you could take workshops on crystals, you could purchase some oils that bring in whatever desired result. And just big, big, beautiful spaces of people celebrating and healing. Yeah, and let's see, another couple of other spaces. I recently went to the Detroit Hoodoo Festival, and that was last April. There's going to be another one, so everybody please go. It's organized by this woman, the Motown Witch. She has a shop in Detroit. And the Hoodoo Festival is, it's just that. So it's like 2 days of hoodoo workshops. Some, the first day I think was more of what is hoodoo and hoodoo's history. And then the second day was practical. This is how you do what you gotta do, you know? And brought in people from all over the country. Another space, online spaces are great. There's for Black witches, there's the Witches Brew. I love the Witches Brew. I spoke with a lot of people for my dissertation research from the Witches Brew. And it's a Black witch space founded by this woman, Daisy October Latifah. I had the opportunity to speak with her as well. It was founded in 2016, and she has files and files. I mean, what a resource. Check out the files section, everybody. Check out the files section. So many books on hoodoo and conjuring, especially books written by Black practitioners and Black scholars. She's a great practitioner. She makes wonderful eighth house oils. And she also has, in terms of thinking about justice, she has the Blitch Fund. So she coined the term Blitch, Black Witch, and she has a Blitch Fund, and the Blitch Fund gives money. So if you're a practitioner of African traditional, African derived religions, you send her a note just saying, you know, I need some money for whatever, you know, I need to leave a toxic situation, domestic violence situation, or I need money to feed my family or whatever, right? And she divines on it and will give money to people who need it. And this money comes from people who donate to this Blitch Fund. So a really interesting way, and I mean, not interesting, a really beautiful way to integrate spiritual practice with Black witchcraft / African traditional, African derived spiritual orientations, right?
And I love the piece there of direct support. I love the way that witchcraft can fuel an activism that is like very big and systemic and also like very specific.
Yeah, I think it's making me rethink activism in many different ways, actually. I think there's a real part of it is like just doing, like being okay, you know, like that's for Black women and femmes, like that's activism, right? Like have enough money to eat and, you know, I mean, to varying degrees and how we think about how we're supporting capitalism. But I really do believe that there's that activism can also look like bringing in money to feed our families or, you know, having work where we feel fulfilled instead of working some corporate whatever that we don't necessarily feel reflects our core spirits, right? And in terms of other spaces, I think there's Daughters of the Moon Conference, Daughters of the Moon Black Witch Convention. It's an annual gathering. It's usually in Baltimore. So Baltimore is doing some exciting things, I would just say. there's some witchy stuff brewing in Baltimore now.
Oh my gosh, we did it. We just did an episode. I just wrote a piece about Lucille Clifton. Clifton House is amazing. And that learning more about her spirit writing and that whole aspect of her work was really, really exciting and moving. I really love Baltimore. I want to spend more time there. And I wanted to say, we also interviewed Kenya Koviak from the Detroit Conjure Festival a while ago. This episode, she's such a force. So there's a few times where I've interviewed people where like the lights are fucking going on and off in my house, you know, and the sound is all crazy. And it was wild when I interviewed her, there was helicopters going overhead. In the first, I think 10 minutes of the episode, she takes us kind of on a walking tour of magical intersection in Detroit. And she's just telling you how you would go through and how the different communities interact and where you might spend your day and who you might meet and where people are and what. And it's a spell. She's a force who really helped me see that city.
Oh, wow. Yeah. It's a beautiful city. There's also New Orleans too, of course. And I asked people why. I was like, why is all this stuff happening in Baltimore? Like, what is... And they're like, well, you know, the ancestors, there's a strong ancestral power here. There's a strong, and people have been here for a long time, right? In New Orleans too, people stayed, you know, Black folks stayed in these cities. And so people have, there's not like a, it's not a city like Atlanta where people are coming in and out of. So there's just like the strong ancestral lineages and there's just work to be done. Work in elevating these ancestors, work in elevating the communities. But yes, Daughters of the Moon Conference is wonderful. I really recommend it. It's led by this woman, Iya Omitola. And so it's usually held in person in Baltimore, but the past 2 years it's been online. Again, 2 days of workshops. And it's multi-religious. And I think that's something that I want to emphasize about these spaces. Most of these spaces are multi-religious, right? So they're not necessarily, I'm going another tangent, but they're not necessarily blended traditions, right? Blended spaces. People aren't blending hoodoo and ifa, right? I think most folks would be like, don't do that. That's a recipe for disaster.
Right.
But they are multi-religious. So people will be, you'll have some Black witches that are initiated into Ifa. You'll have some like me, I'm not initiate, but I'm a practitioner, are practitioners of Ifa. So you have some people that are practitioners of hoodoo. You have people who like the Detroit Hoodoo Festival. There's this one woman giving Ifa Abeo. She was giving a talk on hoodoo and she's a Lukumi initiate and is part of an Ile and very active in her Lukumi world. This other woman is a practitioner of Egyptian witchcraft. Yeah, I think it's multi-religious, but then there's this element of like internal power. And that's what I think the Black witch is, right? It's the Black witch is the self, the religion is the structure through which the self orients her practice and like is able to For instance, I spoke with this woman, Iyalosha Oshunyemi. She's a founder of this Black Witchcraft. She has a lot of workshops online. I love her as well. So many wonderful people that I've come across. I honor all of them. So Iyalosha Oshunyemi, she spoke with me. She said she was born a witch. She's a hereditary witch. Her mom was a witch. Her dad's a witch. And she said, you know, when I was little, I would just get all of these messages from spirit. They'd just be talking to me, right? I would wake up and there'd be like somebody, some dead person on the side of my bed just talking to me, and I couldn't sleep because there are all these dead people talking to me all the time. So she's born with this gift, right? To be able to see and hear spirits. She said, it wasn't until I became initiated into Ifa that I learned how to say, okay, you know, this ancestor, dead person trying to talk to me, telling me something. We don't talk until we're at the altar. This is the space, right? This is the structure. This is the space. The altar space is where we talk. Or say divination, right? This, we talk through tarot, we talk through the keen, or we talk through whatever, we talk through these different forms of divination. And yeah, so that's how I'm starting to see the relationship between religion, especially for Black witches that are like in relationship to these African traditional religions, right? Like the religion itself is the structure. Hoodoo is a religion. Most scholars now will say, most practitioners will say that. It's been debated because some people classify it as magic, but it has rituals, it has elevated ancestors. There are people who, there are deities, there are all the things that would categorize religion. There are processes, there's initiation even. Zorin Hurston was initiated to hoodoo. So yeah, so hoodoo is the structure, right? The practice, what has been developed over centuries and kind of solidified into this thing, right? Same with Ifa, that it's been solidified into this tradition. And then how I understand it is that Black witches engage with these traditions how they can, right? So, or however they feel they need to or want to.
That's such an interesting kind of framing of the religion almost as a tool for the practitioner.
Hoodoo was a tool and is a tool that has been used by Black folks to survive chattel slavery and anti-Blackness, right? Yeah. It was a collection of memories that we all shared from various parts of West and West Central Africa that came together, and philosophies and orientations that came together and mixed with Native American pharmacopoeia and some Christian tools. And it was a tool that we used to heal ourselves, to like physically heal ourselves, to poison the slave master, to hold each other accountable, during slavery, to hold like other Black folks accountable if, you know, someone from somebody else's plantation did some shit to somebody else on another plantation, when there's no systems of accountability or justice among, you know, for Black people. As a tool to bring, to find love, to keep partners, to keep our children with us, right? To keep families together.
Or to not have children, right?
Or to not have children, right? Thank goodness for this man, Harry Middleton Hyatt, who collected all this research in the 1930s and 40s. He collected 5 volumes of hoodoo from the American South, just in people's direct vernacular. There are definitely some problems with it. He was a white guy talking to people, but I mean, it's just story after story of people using these traditions to heal. I've been thinking a lot about healing. People kept talking about it, and I was like, I don't know if I really get it. Like, I did a lot of healing work myself, but I didn't really get it. People would say, so when you heal, you'll heal 7 generations in the past and 7 generations in the future. You hear that a lot in a lot of Black witch spaces. And I was like, I don't think I really understood. It's okay, I understand how you're healing the future, but how are the ancestors healed? How are they healing, right? This is maybe this like, because I've been in the academy too long or something. But I just went over some interviews that I had with this woman, Rebecca, and there's also this woman Alexis Douglas, and they said something very similar. So in my interview with Rebecca, she's a medium, and I was like, so what does this mean, healing the ancestors? And she was like, well, she said, your ancestors are coming through. I was like, what? She said, yeah, she said, your grandma's here, and some other people, some other ancestors. And she said, Rebecca's ancestors were coming through. And she said, well, you know, so it seems like you have some issues with your mom that you need to heal, right? And I was like, yes, how'd you, you know? Yep. I mean, yes, of course, how'd you know, but you know. And she's like, you know, when you heal issues with your mom, you're going to heal a generations of disconnect between mothers and daughters in your family, right? So maybe at some point there was an issue between my great-grandmother and my grandmother and my grandmother and my mother, right? And so that I needed to heal, if not necessarily, if I healed, like I don't need to like talk to my mom or be like have a great relationship with her, right? But heal some of the wounds that she had, maybe some issues around boundaries or codependency or some of the things that resulted from generations of, you know, maybe alcohol abuse or whatever. And that's going to heal the future generations, right, too. But that also elevates the ancestors. So for instance, my grandfather was an alcoholic, praying and elevating him, bringing up his story, talking about him, bringing him into my spiritual world to help, to call in, to manifest something, right? It's elevating him, it's healing him, it's helping him ascend to the next level. And what did Alexa say? Alexa said, at that point, you're not carrying their stuff anymore, right? So if all of their traumas, if my grandmother's codependency, if my grandfather's alcoholism, right, if it's all kind of maybe in my DNA, I'm not holding it. So my stuff is just my stuff, right? She gives an example of like, maybe if I say I'm dealing with stuff around alcohol, then I can heal my relationship with alcohol. Then I'm just maybe someone who just doesn't drink, but I'm not necessarily someone who is an alcoholic, like my grandfather was an alcoholic, right? I'm not carrying his alcoholism with me, or my grandmother's codependence with me. I mean, it just keeps coming up every time, every person I talk to. Healing is so, because it's so insidious for Black folks, right? It's just like, it's in our bones. You know, I tell folks, my family is I'm five generations out of slavery. So it's me, my mother, my grandfather, my great grandmother, my great, great, great grandfather, right? Ran out of slavery, escaped slavery. So yeah, so it's close, you know, and the healing is so necessary because it's carried with us in so many ways, like alcoholism, right? Like codependency, healing, how that healing is healing internalized anti-Blackness for Black people, right? As we heal our ancestors' trauma, we heal ourselves. And then that also means that we can manifest the worlds that we want for ourselves. Yeah, so I just think that if you don't believe that you can have a thing, then it's not really possible, right? And that ancestral trauma makes it so, for a lot of Black folks, it makes us believe that we can't have a thing. I spoke with Jujube, who's has an awesome podcast also, and she told a story about being on a date, and she was like, if you could have anything that you want in this world, you know, without money wasn't an issue, what would you have? And he was like, well, I would just like have enough money to take care of my son. And she was like, really? Like, that's it? Like, anything. She's like, you can have anything you want. He's like, there's no point in dreaming because it's not possible, you know? And so just undoing that kind of mentality is so important for, especially for Black people. It's just so important that we rethink that. She says the notion that you deserve, baby. You deserve it. You know, you deserve this thing. So to even imagine it in a different world for ourselves, right? To imagine maybe, like I was saying, like a job that maybe reflects our morals or ethics better, right? Or something. We have to heal the ancestral, the old ancestral trauma that goes back all the way back to slavery, right? Mm-hmm. And then even to imagine beyond that, to like imagine a better world, right? To not just better ourselves, but also think about, you know, maybe what does it mean to have defunded police force and more community forms of accountability or anything, right? Any kind of dreaming, any kind of manifesting that we do.
I mean, that's profoundly true for all of us, and such a good reminder about the power of our own craft. I think that, like, when we are doing ritual work and supporting each other and taking care of ourselves, that we're doing it with the vision of a possible world. A piece for me of what you just said that I'm going to sit with for a long time, that because I've been having these relationships with my grandfather, my ancestors, I hadn't really understood that piece, that inviting him to take a role in bringing something about being a guide for me, or in manifesting something that heals a part of him that was never fulfilled, you know, that was never good enough, you know, that way of thinking about how our work helps heal the past is really powerful. I'm going to carry that. Thank you for that. I feel really emotional thinking about that. And I hope.
Yeah, me too.
I hope that's something our listeners feel the weight of too, because we all have those ancestors that deserve that kind of homecoming.
They get to make amends, you know, they get to apologize for the harm that they caused. My grandfather caused so much harm. Yeah. He hurt my grandmother, he hurt my mom, he hurt me. He's part of the reason about my relationship with my mom's fraught. He caused so much harm, and just being able to like show up and help out his, you know, grandchild, like, yeah, he's healing. And he's doing that work. I hope so. I hope he agrees. I think he agrees.
Yeah. Well, that interesting tension about how our ability to imagine that makes it so. Mm-hmm. I like to close interviews when I remember, I recently did an interview where I totally forgot to do this because I was just so like fritzy at the end. I was so excited. But I remember now, because you have really grounded us into a thinking about ritual, by asking our guests if you have a ritual that you can share, or a practice, or an incantation, or a plant that you're working with, or something that our listeners can take into this season and into their crafting to be with you, to lend their work to yours, to support your work, or just to learn from you.
Lately, I have been taking a lot of spiritual baths, also because I'm doing ritual around a particular thing. But I've been doing a lot of spiritual baths, and I've been using herbs. I'm doing a 7-day cleanse. A 7-day bath cycle, and it's 3 days of cleansing, it's 3 days of attraction, and 1 day of protection. Some people do baths differently. Some people will do like a pot of boiling water, you know, of course let it cool down, and then throw it over their head to clean their head. I like to be in the bath, and so I'll take like a cloth, the mesh cloth, kind of like a tea bag, and put the herbs in it and put it in the bath. Yeah, so 3 days. So any three herbs that bring about cleansing. So I think I was using nettle. Yeah, three herbs for cleansing, and then three herbs for attraction, and then one herb for protection, or three herbs for protection for the protection bath. And it's so nice. I do it at night, and it's just grounding, and I feel at peace, and I sleep better. And I have all kinds of interesting dreams. And then someone else said prayer too. And I liked that as well. I think prayer, just remembering to pray, doesn't have to be Christian. You know, there's a lot of stuff that comes with that. But remembering just talking to the trees, talking out loud, it's a form of prayer. And I think that it's heard.
Yeah, thanks for that. I think thinking about baths for me as a way of coming back to my body and coming back to embodied knowledge, like you've indicated, it's helpful. I can be really fluttery and emotional and heady and like nerdy and up there, and that's not always the best place for me to be in for making magic shit happen.
Yeah.
Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having me. This is lovely.
Thanks for taking the time. We really appreciate it. And thank you. I mean, it's an enormous labor of love to be a witch doctor.
I love that witch doctor. This is a whole new meaning.
I've had the privilege of interviewing a couple of witch academics, and the glee in your eyes, it reflects the glee in their eyes when you call the witch doctor.
Oh yeah, we love it.
There's a shared fuck you there, I think.
Yes.
A fuck you that we're honored to get to encounter. And I mean, it's a loving fuck you, right? You wouldn't spend your time in the academy if there wasn't so much to value there. Thanks.
Thank you.
And thanks to our coven mates for listening, and to all you listeners out there, wherever you may be, snowy storms or in Atlanta or wherever other wild places you may be in this wild weather. Come home to your body and give your ancestors an opportunity to help you and incant more equitable, beautiful worlds together. Maybe.
Take care. Bye-bye, everybody.
You must be a witch.
The Missing Witches podcast is brought to you by the Missing Witches Coven. Join us right now on patreon.com/missingwitches. Bless a fucking bee.